Welcome everyone to the American Carpet Podcast, where we discuss all things carp related in the USA. Featuring anglers' interviews, stories, and monthly competitions with traditional US and Euro anglers, fly anglers, and anyone who has a passion for this incredible fish, the carp, Cyprinus carpio. Much maligned and misunderstood, and undoubtedly one of the finest sport fish to be targeted here in the USA. This is where we, the guilty ones, can meet. My name is Sean Manning of the American Carp Society, and I'm grateful to be your host. Welcome, everybody. Don't forget to subscribe to the podcast. If you haven't done so already, please share with your friends also on your social media. The more we get the word out about this great fish, the better off we are here in the USA. Now, today, we have a very special guest on the show. His name is Johnny Guerra. He is an official American Carp Society fly angling guide from Austin, Texas. And today we're going to talk about chasing carp on the fly. So first off, welcome, Johnny. Glad you could join us on the show.
Pleasure to be here, Sean.
Now, before we get into the details of your guiding, how long have you actually been fly fishing for any species? How long have you been approaching them on the fly?
Yeah, so basically picked up a fly rod for the first time when I was probably a sophomore in college, so it's been over 10 years. But when I first got the fly rod, I kind of, you know, just messed around with it here and there and left it on the back burner a bit. But probably for about 6 or 7 years, I'd say, where I really started kind of getting obsessed with the fly fishing.
Yeah. Now, I know you're a multi-species angler, and there's actually some great shots of bluegill, trout, catfish, and buff on your Instagram page as well. What is it about carp specifically that you like so much to target on the fly?
Yeah, man. So, I mean, there's plenty of reasons why I love carp, but, you know, I think one of the biggest ones is that they're just prolific. They're abundant, so carp are everywhere. I think most of the major river systems around here, around Austin, have carp, and it'd be hard pressed to find a system that didn't have carp in it.
Well, down there in Austin too, obviously, that's is really famous, isn't it, for large carp and buffalo down there. You got Ladybird Lake, Decca, but a lot of people don't realize there are a lot of really clear, and I don't know the name of the river. I know obviously there's the Colorado River that runs through. The main part of Austin, but there's some really great clear rivers in the hill country and stuff there, isn't there?
Oh man, there's tons of clear rivers. I get that question a lot from people when I mention fly fishing to them, or I get people that are coming fly fishing with me.
Yeah,
you can fly fish in Texas, and I'm like, yeah, man. Like, there's tons of probably 7 major rivers, but we got the Llano, we got the Medina, we got the San Gabriel, which is one of my favorites.
Right.
The San Marcos River, the Pedernales, the Lampasas, even up in the upper Guadalupe, there's carp to be caught on the fly rod. So
yeah, I see pictures, really clear, sort of almost emerald green type clear rivers there. It looks totally un-Texas, doesn't it, honestly?
Yeah, I think people are a little bit surprised by that, but that's one of the beauty. I guess it's sort of a blessing and a curse, because with clear water, obviously, we're able to see and target the carp a little bit easier. But on the other end of it, you know, if you can see the carp, they can see you.
They can see you. That's right.
Yeah. Exactly. Now, that makes it a little more challenging.
Do you fish any of the lakes down there, or do you? I would imagine you've got those gorgeous clear rivers. You're probably spending a lot of time there. But do you fish any of the lakes at all to target them, or do you just stick to the rivers?
I mostly stick to rivers, just because it's a little bit more manageable and digestible for me.
Yeah.
You know, with Texas being such heavily, majority of Texas is probably 98% of Texas is privately owned land.
Right.
And with so much private land around rivers, unless you've got, you know, a nice boat or something to get around lakes, it's basically easier to get around and target carp on rivers, at least for me.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, have you always fly fished for them? Before you got into the fly side of things, did you ever target them in more traditional methods? Because I think I saw a picture of you and John Slayton Eurofishing together on your Instagram page. So are you specifically fly angler now, or do you, you know, approach them in other methods as well?
Yeah. No, yeah. So John Slayton's one of my oldest fishing buddies, and I definitely from time to time love a good bank sit, a good Euro session for carp.
Right.
But I've definitely transitioned over to primarily targeting them on the fly rod.
I would imagine it takes, and it's not to take anything away at all from the Euro approach, because that's pretty much all I do. I've watched admiringly a lot of fly anglers. I've never actually turned my hand to it at all. I would imagine it takes a little bit more skill, from what I'm gathering from the fly anglers that I've spoken to, because they're really spooky fish, aren't they, in terms of how you know, if you're approaching them and they're feeding and you're a sight sort of fish in form, that's very different than a Euro approach, isn't it? You've got to be much more tactile, I would imagine.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's definitely one of the reasons I prefer the carp on fly method. Not to knock anything about it, because I definitely think if you want to catch big fish consistently, the Euro method is the way to go. If you've got a good baiting strategy and a plan, and you've got some time to put in on a specific swim, I think Euro style is definitely the way to go. But for me, the way I like to do it is I like to keep it active.
Yeah.
And I just love the visual aspect of chasing carp. I love to be able to, basically hunt them.
You're hunting them there. You're stalking them, aren't you?
Exactly. Yeah. I love the visual aspect of, being able to get to a water, being able to figure out where carp are, what they're doing, and getting a little more intimate with, the waterway and what the carp are doing. Because I think it's one of those things where if you basically aren't kind of keyed into what's going on with the environment around you, you're not going to be able to key into them.
And I think you have to probably be significantly more tuned in, actually. The more discussion I've had with fly anglers, especially this past year, mm-hmm. as well as Euro anglers, because of the nature of how you approach them, you really do have to be tuned into the waters. It's not like you can really luck out quite as easily when you're approaching them on the fly as you might be able to if you're approaching them. You get a decent swim and you put the bait out, you can set your traps and you can wait for them. You can't really do that. You can't sit on a blank piece of river and hope to God they swim past you.
If you're blind fishing for carp, I mean, it's you might as well be playing the Powerball lottery.
Yeah, yeah. And the other question I wanted to ask you too, is you're going to get a damn sight more exercise fly fishing for them, because you're going to have to walk a damn sight farther to get them, aren't you?
Absolutely, and that's one of the reasons I think I prefer river fishing to lake fishing, is because I just love to
kind of
break. Yeah, it's more active, and I love to break down a stretch of river into separate
sections,
pools.
Sections
of the river.
Yeah.
And I'll sort of make my way. I'll move up a river and treat each section of the river like a completely different fishery, a completely different swim.
That makes a lot of sense. And you're going to get a bunch of variety then, based upon a couple of times that I've actually been up there to the hill country up there. It is gorgeous, and you do have areas where it's a little bit faster flowing and that type of thing. So it's going to keep you, for the time that you can spend there, your mind is going to have to be working a great deal to be successful as a fly angler. And there's quite a large community of fly anglers, actually, isn't there, in Austin? There's a number of them down there. Before we get to that, now, you're actually a professional guide for the Miracle Resort in Austin, aren't you?
Yeah. So it's actually Miraval.
Miraval?
Miraval, yep.
Okay. And how did you come about getting that gig? How did that all come about for you?
Yeah, so it's kind of a long, convoluted story, but basically, I was working for the previous owners of the hotel, which it used to be called Travassa back in the day.
Right.
And as we got bought out by Hyatt Corporation in Miraval, so they came in to take over the hotel and offered me a job to help with getting the outdoor recreation programming for guests going with the new hotel.
Right.
So around the same time, they were trying to expand and look for to expand the programming offerings for the guests. And I had actually taken our GM out fishing before, and he comes up to me and he says, hey, aren't you a fly fisher? How about fly fishing? And it went from there. I basically got
that was,
a proposal.
That was handy for you, wasn't it?
Yeah, it worked out definitely in my favor. And I, you know, he made me get a proposal together, pitch it to some higher ups in the company.
Yeah.
Sort of kind of, you know, prove that we could probably make some money on it, mm-hmm. and prove that I knew what I was talking about doing. And I kind of demoed it for some higher ups and took a few people out fishing. And next thing you know, we got a fly fishing program at the hotel.
That's awesome. That is really cool. Now, are there any trout down there in Austin? I mean, I can't imagine that they are. Are they actually advocating that the guests go and fly fish specifically for carp, or is it there other species? How does that work?
Yeah, there are trout in Texas, but mostly the Guadalupe, the tailwater of Canyon Lake.
Yeah.
So most of our guests are not fishing for trout because I got to keep it sort of in a closer proximity to the hotel.
Right.
So most of our guests are fishing for other warm water species. So bass, Guadalupe bass, sunfish, cichlids, sort of things that are a little bit more manageable.
Yeah.
And I kind of base that on the skill level of the guests that I'm getting.
Right. Well, this is a very naive question for obviously a non-fly angler, but what is the easiest species to target on the fly, would you say?
I would say sunfish and bass are some of the easiest species.
Yeah.
Just because what I can do is I can get guests to the point where they can just sort of cast a little bit, you know, at least flail around and get their fly out to a decent point in the water.
Yeah.
Typically, if you have some sort of dry fly or some sort of small fly like a Rio getter or something like that, you're going to get an eat from – if you can get your fly relatively close to the bank, you're going to get an eat from a sunfish or a bass
or something. Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah. That actually was another question I was going to ask you, but I'll ask you now. Have you ever targeted carp on a dry fly?
Yeah, absolutely. So there's certain times of year where that's going to happen. Typically, I am targeting carp with a wet fly, something that's sinking down to the bottom of the river where they're foraging down on the lower substrate.
Yeah.
But there are times of the year where they will take a dry fly, and kind of now is one of them. Right in the fall, as the we get some cooler weather in, wind starts blowing. The thing I've been seeing a lot of during the fall months is elm seeds. When the wind really gets blowing, carp start clooping along the surface top of the water.
Yeah.
And they are just slurping like madmen, the elm seeds. So you can usually get them on some sort of like an elk hair caddis fly or any sort of pattern that kind of mimics those seeds that they're typically eating off the top.
Okay. And there are some places, I know, speaking to some anglers, it's actually towards the tail end of last year, where they run trips, I think it's Lake Michigan, and is it Beaver Island or something? And there's carp there that chase, you know, like bait fish. So I know, depending upon the area that you're in within the USA, there'll probably be a lot of different approaches for them. And Austin, where you are, Johnny, there's quite a community of fly anglers down there, isn't there?
Absolutely. Yep. Yeah. It's definitely growing with the advent of social media. I mean, it's just definitely taken off to a point where I think back in the day, you know, probably 10, 15 years ago, not too many people were targeting carp on the fly.
Yeah.
But just
there's
over
a lot
the last
now, definitely
100%. The cat's out of the bag for sure. It's definitely something that's caught on. And I get people almost daily hitting me up on Instagram, just, you know, wanting to, that are interested in catching carp and how do I catch carp on the fly and what's the approach and all that good stuff.
How did you get into it? Was there somebody that introduced you to approaching them on the fly?
Not really, man. So it goes kind of back to probably about 8 years ago. Actually you mentioned John Slayton earlier. When John Slayton first moved back to Austin, I had kind of finished college at that point and moved back to Austin.
Yeah.
John Slayton moved up and, you know, we came from South Texas. So we both were raised in a town called Alice. It was 30 minutes from Corpus Christi, Port Aransas, Texas.
Right.
Where we grew up fishing the piers and the jetties of Port A for big bull redfish and black drum.
Yeah.
And when we got back up to Austin, we just, you know, we wanted – we just wanted to feel that pull that we were used to from those big fish down on the coast. And around that time, when John moved up to Austin, I think about the only thing we could think of that would maybe give us something close to that in freshwater was carp.
Okay.
And, you know, it really was, you know, I think John got into it a little bit first, and, you know, he really got involved with the, you just fell into the Euro carp angling scene. I mean,
yeah, he did. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. He got into it, man. And I think he was actually the first guy, probably 8 years ago, he showed me a DVD that I think you guys, American Carp Society, put out, which was the Town Lake.
Oh, the
DVD.
Town Lake. Okay. Yeah, man, that's going back a ways.
Yeah, absolutely, man. And seeing those, just those beautiful big fish that y'all were pulling out of there, I think we kind of, something clicked and we were like, that's the fish we need to chase right there if we want that pool.
Oh, that's awesome, man. That's great to hear that. That also that you and John are really good friends. He's a wonderful angler and a really great guy as well. Let's discuss buffalo a bit, because Austin is also famous for its really, really, really large buffalo, pushing 70 pounds, etc. And I know that you've caught some, I've seen on your Instagram page. What I wanted to ask you, because there's obviously a lot of similarities, and most of the carp anglers here in Texas love to fish for buff as well. But is there any difference for you as a fly angler in your approach to stalking a carp, the pattern that you would use for a carp as a buff, or is it exactly the same?
Yeah, you know, it's pretty much the same. I'd approach them the same way. It's all visual. I, you know, look for the fish first to be feeding, because that's a distinction, I think, in carp fishing. And I think that's what sets, you know, sets people apart from being just decent and becoming a good carp angler on the fly, is, you know, being able to restrain yourself and only, you know, approach fish that are actually
feeding,
catchable. Yeah. That are actually catchable. Yeah. That are feeding. And so that's the way I'll approach them, the same way as I see carp, which is looking for them to be feeding on the bottom. And, it's pretty much the same thing. The only real difference is that I typically downsize my fly. Mm-hmm. I'm typically using, you know, size 8 hooks, for my carp flies, but I'll typically go down to maybe a 10 or even a 12 to target the buffalo.
Yeah.
And then the other thing that's really, different about the buffs is that they're so subtle with their takes.
Aren't they? Yeah, they are. They're very, for the size that they can get, the way that they bite, they're so gentle.
So gentle.
Yeah, that's why I asked, you know, if there was a difference, if you saw that difference in approaching them on the fly, which, you know, that, it makes sense. You're going to size everything down a little bit more, you know, subtly to approach them. What weight rods do you guys use? When, like, what do you feel comfortable with if you're, what weight fly rod?
Yeah, I'm typically on I think my go-to is a 6 weight.
Yeah.
I'll sometimes have an 8 weight when I'm specifically know I'm going to encounter a large fish or think I'm going to be around a bigger fish.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes I, you know, I'll hook into one with my 6 weight and wish I had my 8 weight.
I was going to ask you, regards to that, because if you're using a 6 weight, what size for anybody listening that's not a fly angler, obviously the rods are gauged in terms of a weight number, and the higher than the, you know, higher the number, the, if I'm correct, the more powerful the rod. What's on a 6 weight rod, what would you feel comfortable in terms of a carp size being able to handle?
Oh, I mean, you know, I think for sure up to a 20-pound carp easily.
Okay.
It would definitely give it a workout. But, you know, the reason I prefer a 6 weight, I think, is just because the line, I mean, I think that's a big misconception about, you know, weight class and rods, but the weight of a rod has to do more with the weight of the line itself. So the reason why I prefer a 6 weight is because, you know, the line is just light enough to where you can make delicate presentations to the fish.
Right.
With an 8 weight, you're getting to that point where you're really kind of, your fly line's a little heavier, so it's splashing on the water a little bit more.
Yeah.
And I think that's why, you know, I've never personally used one, but I think a lot of carp anglers carp on the fly angler specifically will, you know, go for the 7-weight because it's a good middle ground between the two.
That's what I've heard as well. Yep. And I just want to go back to something that you mentioned that I don't want to overlook, because I've had a number of fly anglers have said the same thing on, you know, when I said to you, you know, what's the difference between buff and carp in terms of approaching them? And you brought something up and you said about being patient to only fish for carp when they're actually feeding, because you get one shot pretty much, don't you? You get one shot, and there's so many anglers, Johnny, that have said the same thing, which is, you know, how they learnt with experience over the years is just because you see it, it doesn't mean to say that you throw a fly at it.
100%, man. And that's one of the if I could give anybody a tip on, you know, stepping up their game with catching carp on the fly, it's just that. It's just like learning how to have a little bit of restraint and not just flailing around and casting at the first fish you see cruising through the water.
Yeah.
If I could go back, man, I remember when I first started fishing for carp and targeting them with the fly rod, I remember seeing, you know, even a cruising carp, I would just start flailing my arm around and trying to cast at them as quickly as possible.
That's so common to hear that, yeah. Johnny. That's so common. Every single fly angler that I've spoken to who targets carp has gone through exactly the same experience.
Absolutely, man. And it's instinct, you know. You see that carp and you get so excited, your adrenaline starts pumping, yeah, and everything in you wants to try to do that. But throughout the years, I've just realized that, you know, carp is it's a low numbers game. I think some of the best days you go out and catch carp, a good day is when you see three carp and you cast three times, you know?
Yeah.
Exactly. And if you're, you know, flailing around and casting at carp when you really didn't have a real good shot at, you're just going to spook them and you're going to prevent your chances of actually hooking into the fish that you wanted, or even a bigger fish. If you just go at the first fish you see, you could have spoiled the chances of just as if you just waited and watched the water for a little bit. I think that's one of the biggest things in carp fishing is just, I think that's what makes a good angler.
It does.
Is the power of observation, being able to slow down and stop and watch what's going on the water before you start.
That's regardless of any style. It's exactly the same thing, whether you're float fishing or a traditional Euro method or fly angler. And that's a great piece of advice, because every fly angler that I've ever spoken to has said exactly the same thing. If I could go back and have more patience, and I think it was, I did an interview with Chris Fowler a couple of years ago, and I remember him saying that, you know, the amount of times initially where you'd be walking a bunch to find them, and then if you didn't target them correctly, you know, you'd blow it because they'd be really spooky and they would be gone. So that's great advice, and probably even more of a reason for anybody wanting to, you know, target carp on the fly to go with a guide, because it's not something that you can easily figure. They're not the easiest fish just to show up and, you know, trying to ham and egg it on your own, you know, from watching a couple
absolutely,
of YouTube
man.
Videos.
Absolutely. And I see that all the time, you know, and that's one of the hardest things for when I first get people who are interested in targeting carp on the fly. Yeah. That's one of the hardest things for them to get used to, is not constantly casting and, you know, having some restraint and only casting at the fish when you know you have a good approach, you have a good angle to cast at. Because it's hard for some folks to only go out fishing and only cast three or four times.
Yeah.
But I get that all the time. I literally took a guy out 3 days ago, and he, you know, it was one of those situations where I constantly kind of gauge the level and the ability of the people that I take out.
I can imagine.
And it's one of those things where, you know, gentlemen especially are always kind of overzealous with their ability and you know what they tell you of their casting abilities and whatnot, but I've gotten to the point where I can pick up on that quite a bit. And this gentleman, you know, I could tell just by the way he was talking to me, he knew a little bit about fishing, and he probably was a pretty decent caster. So I actually took him out to target some carp on the fly, and the whole time, man, I think he was really dubious of me, because you know, I kept telling him, like, hold off. Like, you know, I know you want to fish for bass. I know we want to cast, but let's just slow it down. Let's, like, wade through the water as calmly, as quietly as we can, because I know these spots where carp are going to be lying. And if we can just slow it down a little bit, I promise you we'll see him. And sure enough, you know, it was so hard for him. I actually let him fish for bass and sunfish a little bit on the way.
To get out of his system a little bit.
Yeah, exactly. I let him get it out of his system. And I think, you know, honestly, I think he thought I was kind of bullshitting at first. But the moment I spotted, and it was actually a buff that I spotted for the first time.
Right.
I saw that fish and I told him, you know, to kind of stop and come over and see what was going on. And he saw that fish, man, and his eyes lit up.
Yeah. Yeah. I would imagine that you that's one of the things probably as a guide that you have to contend with. And another question I wanted to ask you was, do you ever have somebody who you take out from the hotel, you know, on a guiding trip, and yep, they have experienced before, but they've never actually experienced targeting carp? Have you?
Oh, man.
And what is their attitude? What's their attitude if you bring it up, or what's their attitude if they try for them? What happens?
You know, man, with as popular as it is these days, I'm so surprised to still get tons of people who look at me sideways when I mention carp to them.
Yeah.
And it's mostly, you know, it's mostly older folks who still are not
hip,
too keen on it. Yeah. hip to the carp yet.
It's a generational thing, definitely. And it is definitely changing, which is great, obviously, for the fish, but
100%, man. And it's definitely a generational thing, but you know, really all I have to do, I'll mention it to him and usually gets met with some sort of dubious attitude or a sideways look. But typically all I have to do is pull out a picture. A lot of times I'll pull up the American Carp Society website and just show them some of those big, beautiful carp that you guys are catching, and,
yeah,
and they will light up, man. Their attitude will go from 0 to 60, and they will be all ears whenever I'm talking about the carp.
Cool. Now, I wondered because having spoken to some other fly anglers who have friends, and that was another question I was going to ask you. Do you have friends that are anglers who don't, you know, that are fly anglers, but they don't target carp?
You know, I mean, I meet a few people here and there who yeah, still, you know, don't know much about it. But for the most part, all I get is just pure interest with people who don't specifically target carp yet.
Yeah.
All I get is questions, and man, I've seen that, and I really would like to catch a carp, but don't know quite how to approach it. So I
That's
get
great.
People messaging me all the time. Yeah.
That's great.
Wanting to know a little more information about how to catch them.
And I think a lot has changed, you know, over the past 8 to 10 years. I know there's quite a bit that has changed. So it's definitely trending in, you know, in the right direction, which is which is obviously great for the fish. Now, I would imagine your favorite time to target them, like most fly anglers, is sort of springtime and fall time, so spring, summer, fall. Is that correct?
Yeah, you got it. I mean, for me, it's definitely springtime, pre and post spawn for the carp.
Right.
Mostly post spawn when they get done spawning. Man, they are just, you know, especially with the warm weather coming in, carp are definitely moving into the shallows. And that's where I see some of that first sign of spring when the weather starts warming, some of the bigger carp I see coming into the shallows and definitely starting to feed.
Yeah.
And I say that's definitely the best time. As you get into the fall, into the winter, as the weather starts to cool, carp definitely start acting a little bit funny. I mean, at least their patterns change. They're not constantly eating on the bottom like they will, foraging along for nymphs and other things. It's definitely that time. The other thing I see a lot of in the springtime is we'll get, you know, you asked earlier about dry fly fishing, and
yeah,
typically the times that I'm targeting carp and catching them on a dry fly is the windows are pretty seldom. One of them is in the fall when they're eating elm seeds.
Mm-hmm.
And then the other one I definitely has hit me for the last at least 3 years is every year in the springtime, we get dewberries that are growing along the rivers in Texas. Okay. Dewberry is a wild berry in Texas. And You know, it's one of the coolest things that I've ever seen and learned with carp fishing is that in the springtime when those dewberries start growing, and they'll grow, it's a vine, and it will grow kind of, the vine will grow along other trees that you'll get along the rivers in Texas.
Mm-hmm.
And those berries, man, that when they start getting ripe and dropping off the vine, I have literally seen carp basically like huddled waiting under these trees. So anytime the wind blows in the spring and these berries start falling into the water, you will see carp rising up and just basically gorging on these berries. So that's another time I've been able to catch them on the surface is whenever they're eating those dewberries off the surface in the spring.
Yeah.
I will tie up with, you know, basically mop, which is kind of a frowned upon fly tying material, but mop material, I'll tie up these berry imitations and the fly that they will just crush them.
I actually heard there is a, there's a great fly angler, Casey Badger. I was doing an interview with him a year or so ago, and I recall him saying that in certain, I believe it was Arizona when he was fishing, I think he was fishing for some really big grass carp out there, that they would, at the sound of the berries actually hitting the water, they would hit. You know, they would actually turn on a dime based upon the sound because they were so used to this sunberry or some kind of seed that was hitting the water from, you know, falling from a tree or from the water's edge. And they became so accustomed to it that they would almost strike based upon the sound of something hitting the water before they even knew what it was. So,
yeah, 100%. That's definitely one of the things that I've noticed is that's one of the only times of the year where you can actually get away with splashing your fly on the water.
Right.
Because they actually are listening and waiting for that wind to blow and those berries to start splashing on the surface of the water.
Yeah.
And they just come up and gorge.
Yeah, because I mean they're really spooky most of the time, but obviously if they're in a, you know, if they're in a feeding situation like that, and there's a lot of that going on, they're probably going to be a little bit easier to target. What do you think is the hardest water that you've ever fished for them, Johnny, in terms of targeting carp? Is there one specifically that have you found there's differences between the waters that you fish and how the fish react?
Yeah, you know, I mean, when it comes to hard fishing for carp, especially on the fly, I think the biggest thing is just any murky water becomes just a little more challenging and kind of, you know, difficult, flat out difficult. One of the San Gabriel River is one of those rivers where it's one of my favorite rivers to target carp.
Right.
And typically that river is pretty damn crystal clear. I mean, most stretches of the river up above Granger Lake, which is where it eventually flows down into, are almost like bathwater clear. So I target them typically in really clear water in that river. But when you start getting down into where the San Gabriel River feeds into Granger Lake, the water starts getting really, really murky right around that area. And there are loads of carp there. I've seen hundreds, thousands even of carp right in that area, but they get really difficult to fish for because the water is just so murky. So typically I'm, you know, fishing to, you know,
bubbles,
plumes,
yeah,
bubbles or plumes of silt or anything that's along the bottom, any indication, but that's the closest to blind fishing I'll ever get. And I think that's really the most challenging bit of water.
Yeah. Question for you. Why did you join the American Carp Society?
I mean, it's just one of those things. You guys, stand for, all the things that I'm passionate about spreading, you know, all the attributes of what carp are and how they are just a real legitimate sport fish to chase, whether it be Euro style angling or carp on the fly.
Yeah.
It's just, it's kind of an untapped resource, I think, in our country.
It is. And I can't thank you enough, obviously, for the support and for all of the members that support, you know, what we do and our vision and goals. And there's, like I said, there's a lot that's changed over the, you know, over the past 10 years. Is there anything else that we could do? And we started this last year, the fly membership, obviously, and we want to do as much with that as we possibly can. Is there anything else that we can do as an organization? do you think, to help, other than what we're trying to do everything that we can, but there's always room for improvement?
Yeah, no, man. I mean, honestly, I think y'all are doing a great job of kind of centralizing an organization that can go, to be the go-to for all things carp. When you guys let out the Carp on the Fly membership, I literally jumped up for joy. I was like, oh man, finally, like, that is so cool. And I think it's going to be a great resource to get more people interested and excited about carp throughout the whole country.
Well, it's the reason why we did it is the fly anglers have, the fly carpers have really, really helped the last few years, specifically on the photography front. I must say that the fly carpers on Instagram have really been representing the fish incredibly well over the past few years. I remember Wayne and I were discussing, we'd go through Instagram feeds and you'd see these wonderful, you know, creative shots. So yep. that was a huge reason for us to, like you said, want to bring it all together under one roof, because the thing that we all have in common, outside of being anglers, and whether you're, you know, a fly angler, a traditional angler, whatever that it is, we're all doing it for exactly the same reason. It's that tug of that fish.
Yeah,
that trying to target that unknown fish and that bigger fish type of thing. So and also, thank you, sir. Thank you. You are an official American Carp Society. You are our official American Carp Society guide down in Austin. So I'm hoping that with once we get 2020 put to bed, which all of us want to do, yep, within the next few years, we'll start to see things get busy there once more. Each month on the American Carper podcast, we run a competition for you, the listeners. And before we get to the November competition, which I'm going to do here in a second, we have to give a big shout out to last month's winner. So our winner for the October contest was Tom Ouellette from Torrance, California. So well done to Tom. An American Carp Society baseball cap and Barnaby's Revenge bait spray, it's on its way over to you. And so for the month of November, we're going to be giving away another American Carp Society baseball cap to the lucky winner and a tub of the new boosted Astaberry Cream pop-up corn. And so the question for the November competition is this: in what year did the American Carp Society host the first World Carp Championship in the USA? In what year did the American Carp Society host the first World Carp Championship in the USA? Send in your answers to info@americancarpsociety.com with November competition answer in the subject line, along with your name and address, and the winner will be pulled out of the hat at the end of the month and announced the following month. Well, that's about all we got time for today's show. I'd like to thank our guest, Johnny Guerra, for his help and time with this. If any of you have questions for him, Johnny, what's the best way for people to get in contact with you, bud?
Yeah, thanks, Sean. It's been a real pleasure. Best way to get a hold of me is definitely Instagram. My Instagram handle is @friendofthefishes, all one word.
Awesome. Thanks, everyone, for listening. We'll be back here same time, same place, 2 weeks from now. So don't forget to join us. You can reach out to us here at the American Carp Society through Facebook and Instagram, Pinterest, and Twitter. Tag us with your captures with #AmericanCarpSociety and #JoinTheGuiltyOnes, and we will feature you on the feed. You can contact me directly with any questions at Sean@AmericanCarpSociety.com. Be lucky.